Hi, everybody. This is Lori Handlers. I'm your host on the program Tantra Cafe, a program for spiritual enlightenment. And I come to you in peace. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Once again, I'm thrilled to be doing this show. This is our Valentine's Day / week show, because many of you will be hearing it during the week of Valentine's Day. Some of you will actually hear it on Valentine's Day, which is very exciting. And because this is about Valentine's, this show is really about Tantra. And I have a question. What has love got to do with it? Does love have anything to do with Tantra? A lot of people think it does. A lot of people think they have to be in romantic love with whoever they practice Tantra with. And this is actually the time of year that we focus on romantic love and on Hallmark and on roses and on chocolates. But really, does this romantic love add to our lives? Or does romantic love lead us to drama and heartache? I don't know. It's a question that I actually wrestle with all the time inside me. What's love got to do with it? So my guests today are going to share with us how to apply fundamental tantric concepts within the context of 21st century partnership. And I don't know. I mean, they're going to tell us whether love has really anything to do with it. So my guests today are Mark Michaels and Patricia Johnson, and they are a devoted married couple, and they've been teaching Tantra together since 1999. They've lectured throughout the United States as well as Canada, Europe, and Australia. And they've written a couple of books. The first one is The Essence of Tantric Sexuality, and the second is Tantra for Erotic Empowerment, The Key to Enriching Your Sexual Life. They also run something called the Pleasure Salon, a monthly New York City gathering of sex-positive educators and professionals, and I'm sure we'll hear a little more about that. So, Mark and Patricia, in terms of Tantra and romantic love, where do we start? How do we even know how to get our arms around this?
This is an excellent question, and it's also one we grapple with a lot.
I think the one place to start is really to look at the tradition and look at the history of romantic love. There really, in the tantric text, isn't much about love, and certainly the culture in which Tantra evolved was radically different from the one that we live in. But if you look at kind of world history, the idea that romantic love should be the foundation of a partnership is something that has evolved really only in 20th century and in the Western world. And so it's kind of complicated to apply, to translate Tantra into our modern Western way of thinking. I think there are some ways to do that, but as a starting point, we have to realize that technically speaking, love's not got very much to do with it at all.
You know, I thanks for saying that. I actually think that love and the way it's presented to us in films, in music, in especially as we're teenagers, at least in Western culture, we're piped filled with this heartbreak and I can't live without you. And my life started when you stepped in, all these songs sing about it. And I really think that kind of messes us up. So I'm really glad you said what you said as your opening.
Yeah. Another one from that sort of ilk is You Complete Me.
You know, Jerry Maguire, the big tug at the heartstrings line from that movie.
Wow.
And,
yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a little bit separate from Tantra, but in terms of our culture and the idea that, you know, we think that we need some other person to complete us, And that's so deeply embedded in our psyches is really, really troubling. And of course, the tantric idea is that we each are embodiments of the divine and complete unto ourselves. And we really can't begin to relate to another until we've embraced that fully.
So that's really, I mean, that's really the basic tenet of Tantra. Like, why would we go inside to find somebody else? We'd really want to go inside to find ourselves. So that poses some questions here, given Valentine's Day, Valentine's Week. But I want to ask you a few personal things before we actually get to what does this mean for other people. So you two are a devoted, loving couple. So that means that you're in love? Were you in romantic love at some point?
Well, you know, we chose the word devoted on purpose because a lot of people say committed married couple. And commitment seems, well, first of all, that's what you do with insane people, right? You commit them. And devoted has a more dynamic aspect to it. It's more ongoing, and it's recreated moment by moment.
And it brings that the tantric ideal of worshiping your partner into, you know, it puts it in a pretty concrete framework. But so devotion was a very conscious choice. As for in love, yeah, we are. I don't think that our relationship has ever pursued the or followed the kind of traditional romantic model at all, in that we met initially and decided that we were going to practice sexual tantra together, and talked about that before we even touched each other.
Yeah.
So we never really dated.
And both of us, for both of us, a goal of a romantic relationship or a lifelong partnership wasn't really high up, if at all, in our minds, I don't think. Not for me. But practicing tantra was the big focus for us.
Yeah, and same here. I mean, I was at a point when we met where I really didn't want and didn't think that I would have a long-term partner or a single long-term partner.
Wow. So this just begs the question. Thank you. Thanks for being so straight about that. And, did you meet in Tantra, or did you meet and then go to Tantra together?
In Tantra. Yeah, actually. Yeah.
I had just taken a teacher's training and was giving my first public lecture in New York City, and Patricia attended it.
I came to it. Yeah. And, I don't know. I was pretty skeptical when he walked in the room. I'm like, yeah, Mr. Tantra man, whatever, you know. because I had read some things, and I'd heard it, you know, that, you know, a fair amount of guys go, oh, yeah, I teach Tantra or I train Tantra, and, you know, as a pickup line, and you think, oh, wow. So, I had been studying it since college, and he knew what he was talking about, and he was so well prepared and had so many notes that we started a conversation about.
And it turned out that we had been on the same sacred sexuality listserv. This was back in the days of listserv, so I kind of recognized her handle and remembered some of the things that she'd written online, and so we got to, she finally. We exchanged a bunch of emails, and she finally said, well, let's meet for coffee. Turned out we had sushi and not coffee, but we basically just decided over sushi that we were going to practice together.
And it was great to me because it really blew that whole, you know, the rules and the whole dating concept. And to me, it's a real mistake to withhold who you are as a sexual being when you're, you know, relating to a potential partner or a potential, you know, sexual partner. And it's just mind-boggling that people try to withhold that kind of information to me.
So do you mean like somebody who has to be courted with 10 dinners and 3 movies and check out somebody's bank account before they have a sexual encounter?
You could say that. I mean, if that's what you value and you're really not interested in sex, that's great. Or, you know, a sensual life with a partner, that's great. But if you really are interested in that, why not put that on the table in the beginning? Then your partner or the person you're meeting can say, you know what, I'm really interested in that. Or, you know what, I'm not interested in that. I just...
Right.
It seems like that.
Well, I agree. I absolutely agree with you. I think it's brilliant that you met and took that dance, you know, went into that partnership together at like an exploration. Like, I'm pretty sure you probably know the One Taste people. You probably know Nicole Dadon. They talk about research, people doing research together. So it sounds like you met and you held hands and started to do research together in a very honest and straightforward way But you obviously did work first, because to come to that conclusion, to step outside of the fundamental paradigm, which says boy meets girl, falls in love, girl meets boy, they fall in love, and they have to have each other forever or else they're incomplete. Obviously, you had done enough work with yourselves that you stepped outside of that paradigm.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a very important point. I had been married once before and divorced and, you know, been through a lot of tumultuous relationships after the divorce, and really only kind of after this teacher training had arrived at a point where I was not looking for anything anymore. And so, I had done a great deal of work and I was really ready for it. I think Patricia's experience was a bit different, but I'll let her speak to that.
Well, actually my mind's going on just to touch on the relating. We don't consider it like what did you say, research partner? We call it co-creation and a collaboration. Those are the two words we like.
Okay.
Maybe they feel just a little warmer to me. I don't know.
Well, Patricia had really done a great deal of work on herself, and is a professional opera singer as well as teaching Tantra. So her whole attitude toward her career as a singer was one of pretty intense devotion, and so she really wasn't interested in a long-term partner. I didn't expect that would be part of her life.
No, and certainly didn't have time for any drama or any complications.
I see what you mean. So this just begs the question, what do you do on Valentine's Day?
Well, this year we're actually going up to
New Haven
to see our friend Tristan Taramino do some presentations up there.
That sounds great.
I don't know if we'll do Valentine's evening, but that's going to be on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, I don't know. It's you know, the idea of expressing appreciation, connecting energetically, really daily we'll be practicing some sort of energetic exchange in which I'll get chills or I'll feel my breath be taken away. So Valentine's Day doesn't really seem like, you know, I live that every day, so I don't know.
That's right. That's perfect. I mean, that is perfect. Every day, so you don't have to have a Hallmark experience. You can actually have a real-life, orgasmic, love-filled, you know, what do I want to say, tuned-up, experience, turned on, tuned up experience. That sounds like that's your life. Yeah.
So I mean, you know, we started out being kind of against romantic love, and it's just, I think what we're proposing, and we can talk about this a great deal more, is just a very different model of approaching relationship and love. And there are ways to apply some of the real core principles of Tantra, even though it evolved in a culture that's so different from our own. I think the philosophical precepts are things that are incredibly useful.
Well, we're gonna take a break for a moment. We're talking with Mark Michaels and Patricia Johnson, and we're speaking about romance and whether Tantra has something to do with romance or nothing to do with romance. In our next segment, we'll probably talk about, are we against romantic love, or do we have something? Explore the model more that can actually replace it and maybe be more fulfilling. So please stay tuned. If you're wondering what book you should read to jumpstart your sex life and increase your happiness, try my book, Sex and Happiness, The Tantric Laws of Intimacy. This short, easy-to-read book will make you laugh at yourself and possibly even make you cry as you discover my tantric secrets for happiness and how they apply to you. In the book, I begin with the 10th law, make love in the unknown, and then work you all the way through laws 1 through 9 to teach you how to be in the unknown, fresh, every moment, every day. Sex and Happiness puts the innocence and love back into sex and gives Tantra the respect it deserves. Only $19.99 in paperback or $14.99 as an ebook. Please go to sexandhappiness.com to order your copy of Sex and Happiness by me, Laurie. Well, we're back with Patricia Johnson and Mark Michaels, and we're talking about romantic love as a paradigm, as a concept. Are we for it? Are we against it? I just want to let you know that I'm now in a community. I live in a community of physically immortal beings, and we're not that into romance. We're trying to take the female bitch out of females, or the mother cow out of females, and take away the male ego, egocentric, male cool, male quiet, male in his cave thing out of males. We're trying to meet each other on more equal playing field, and it's really interesting to watch as people explore their relationship to that kind of taking away the roles. And in my study of Tantra, certainly there's been a heightening of Shakti, the goddess, and heightening of Shiva, the god. So I'm kind of in a research place myself about this. So we left off, you know, saying, were we taking a stand against romance? So, Mark, maybe you can speak about that a little bit more.
Well, I just to touch on the history briefly once more.
Yeah.
In, you know, romance is part of cultures around the world. It's certainly, you know, Radha and Krishna is a very romantic kind of story. And in the West, we have the evolution of romantic love through the troubadours in the Middle Ages. And a lot of times there's this emphasis on the unrequited nature of romantic love. And that's a very, very powerful emotional experience that has a lot of value, because it can be the source of great devotion. So there's nothing intrinsically wrong with that.
It's the core of bhakti yoga, if you think about it, that unrequited sort of longing to be, you know, in union with the divinity that you were worshiping.
So there's it's a deep human need to have those kind of feelings. Where it gets really confusing and messed up is when, as has happened in the modern era, that gets grafted onto the concept of being in a partnership with somebody else. Because those feelings, generally speaking, especially if they get fulfilled, don't last. You know, there's maybe that 6 months of new relationship energy where you have that kind of intensity.
Where your body is literally, you know, put you on drugs.
Yeah, it's a really great high at first. That romance, that tingling in the stomach, the heart speeding up, blushing.
You're not needing sleep.
But eventually it fades, and often that leads to, you know, disappointment, disillusionment, and in many cases the search for someone else to fulfill it.
And plus we feel like at that point couples often, you know, sadly discard a relationship just because they don't feel that kind of high anymore, and they just move on, and I don't think that's necessarily needed in all cases.
Yeah, there are things that we can do to keep that energy going, certainly by just doing some practices. Eye gazing, you know, is the simplest one, and doing that regularly really recreates the experience of falling in love. But you can do that and not have all the drama that goes with the unrequited part. So what's happened, though, is that we think that romantic love is the foundation for a good relationship and a lasting relationship. It may be. It may very well not be. You know, there's studies that show that arranged marriages don't fare any worse than marriages that are based on romantic love. So it's not, you know, romance isn't necessary for a successful and positive kind of relationship. And I think a lot of people get off track, and also the belief that it needs to be romantic all the time. We certainly have our romantic moments, but it's not necessary to sustain a positive relationship.
No, and we're not seeking them. They happen actually, you know, you stick with the practices, you stay level-headed with the practices, you stay in, you know, having awareness at the moment, and it opens up the window for feeling romantic, or love or tingles and all of that. But if you seek it, you're lost. It's like you're not creating the environment and
the conditions for you to feel those things or experience those things.
One thing we like to talk about is our guru's guru described love as profound interest. And we feel like that's a real big shift from what we're taught culturally.
Yeah, and we tend to think of the opposite of...
What is it, profound trust?
Profound interest.
Interest, profound interest.
Yeah. And if you think about it, I think there's a really wonderful kernel of wisdom in there. Well, not kernel, it's a big piece of wisdom. We tend to think of love and hate as opposites, but love and hate are really both intense emotions that are a bit more closely related than we often like to acknowledge. The opposite of love is really indifference. You know,
right.
If you think about couples that have been together for years and just bicker constantly and appear to really despise each other.
Sometimes they have really rock-solid relationships and they'll be together for a long, long time.
I don't know about rock-solid, but enduring.
Enduring, yeah, let's say that.
Let's say they have rock-solid banging sex, because lots of times people have great makeup sex after they're fighting all the time. And sometimes it's just a performance.
Yeah.
You know, for other people, like they don't fight when they're home, but they fight when they're with us. So I don't know about that. I don't know about that rock solid.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, not rock solid, but definitely in this rock solid in the sense that
they're stuck together.
They're stuck together, and the antagonism sometimes can be as strong a bonding factor as you know, intense love for one another is really the point. If you're indifferent to somebody, then there's nothing to keep you in connection with them.
And that's real insidious. I think in all long-term relationships, we're all vulnerable to that, where it's indifference is the same as taking each other for granted. I mean, just totally being unaware that you're actually sharing a space and a home with someone else.
So this is where a certain amount of effort, we don't like the term work on your relationship at all because it implies something that's quite negative. But there is some effort involved in cultivating interest in your partner and paying attention to what your partner is saying, what matters to your partner, to being open to discover something new. Because we tend to think, and this goes back to what Patricia said earlier about commitment, that, you know, when you get into a relationship or, you know, in our case, when you actually get married, that sort of everything stops and that, you know, you've signed the papers, you've taken the vows, and it's a done deal, and you don't have to really think about each other anymore. Well, that's really not true because we're constantly changing, we're constantly evolving. There's always something new to discover. Every person is at some level a mystery to everyone else. And so there's always something that you can new to find. It's just a matter of making the effort to be open to it and deliberately retaining your interest in your partner. Now,
well, you know,
it's probably impossible to do that, you know, 24/7, but if you make that effort a little bit on a daily basis, you can keep things fresh and constantly be in the process of discovering something new.
You know, Osho says that if once you think you know your partner, the relationship is over. He scorned the word relationship and said that people had to keep relating and just what you said, discover the freshness and the newness and create freshness and newness about themselves every single day of every relating to the person. Like the relationship is a thing and relating is an act. So.
Yes.
That coincides with what you just said, and it's really important. That's why that's why in my book, I start the book with Make Love in the Unknown, because making love in the unknown for me is making love to every day and making love with my partner and making love to myself with a freshness that's not habitual, that's not the known, that's not the familiar or the comfortable. It's really the adventure. So it sounds like your whole philosophy of being in relationship and marriage together is in the relating aspect, you know, and not a thing, not like a thing, although you said you can't do it 24/7.
Well, we're human. It's like everything else. There's going to be times when we lapse into habitual behaviors. We can't really survive without those. It's just hardwired into us. But if we make some effort, we can also not live our entire lives that way.
Another concept we'd like to talk about is that the act of relating sort of creates a third entity. So I exist as an entity by myself, Mark does. And then by us relating and applying profound interest to one another, there's a third thing, our relationship, you know, that is an actual living, breathing entity that we both are continuously breathing life into and, building and cultivating. So it's not about me and it's not about Mark, but when we're together, there's a third thing that takes on a greater importance in a lot of ways. Not that we neglect our own personal lives, but
that we're both, as Patricia used the word collaborating earlier, we're both collaborating on a kind of project that is the life that we share. And it's not so much, and this is kind of another aspect of what people tend to think about in the modern world, is not so much about getting my needs met. You know, you hear that so much. Oh, I need, you're not fulfilling my needs, and people complain about how their partner doesn't do stuff for them.
Right, as if anyone could fulfill your needs or my needs.
But we're both actively putting attention into this life that we're creating together. You can think of it almost in artistic terms, that it's this great work of art that we're collaborating on.
Now, that was very romantic, I have to say.
Yes, beautiful. It's a masterpiece. It's beautiful. Well, hang on. We're talking with Mark Michaels and Patricia Johnson, and we're talking about romantic love in a certain sense. We're talking about a different whole way of relating, which is more in line with the tantric way of relating, which can involve some romance but doesn't necessarily hinge on romance or some of the ways we've bought into mistakenly to a system that's doomed to fail when that romance goes. And when we come back next, we're going to find out more about how they organize their workshops, how you can find out about them. And I have a few other questions up my sleeve for them. So please stay tuned. You're listening to Tantra Cafe, a program for spiritual enlightenment. I'm Laurie Handlers, and we'll be right back. If you're listening to Tantra Cafe, congratulations. You've reached a higher plane of consciousness in caring for yourself and caring for your significant other. Tantra can help with physical and emotional bonding to nurture your relationship. And there's another level of care that you should be considering as well. It's your family's financial well-being. I rely on DeLone Financial Services to guide me on this journey. And Jeff DeLone is my friend. He and I have worked together for years. He even helps care for my father's finances. For information about your family's financial planning, contact Jeff DeLone at 610-356-1253. That's 610-356-1253. Or you can email Jeff at jdelone@deloanefinancialgroup.com.
Securities and investment advisory services are offered through FSC Securities Corporation, member FINRA SIPC. Jeff DeLone is a registered representative with FSC Securities Corporation. DeLone Financial Group is not.
Okay, we're back, and I'm here with Mark Michaels and Patricia Johnson, and we're talking about the Valentine's Day question, the Valentine's Week question, romance, in relationship or a certain other way of relating, which we've discovered in Tantra. So I want to ask you, you know, how can people get started at finding out, you know, what would be the best way for people to get started finding out about how to alter their relationships from this romance-based needy, needy, needy thing into something that's more conscious, something that's more what you talked about, a creation?
Well, I mean, our books are a wonderful place to start. I think that we have a whole chapter in our first book, The Essence of Tantric Sexuality, which sort of deals with the tantric model of relationships. And then our second book, Tantra for Erotic Empowerment, talks a great deal about our views on relationship and how to, and includes exercises for how to make that real. I think, you know, one starting place is to develop the capacity to love yourself. And there are, I think, two key pieces in that, one sexual, directly sexual, and one not. The directly sexual one is to really explore conscious self-pleasuring and to learn yourself as a sexual being without necessarily reference to another.
And apply the spirit of experiment and discovery and mystery, as you were speaking earlier about, to yourself and your relationship to yourself as a sexual being.
You know, we have a tendency not to use self-pleasuring. Sorry, what?
I just want to say this is great. I mean, what you're saying about people discovering themselves and giving themselves permission, first of all, to have self-pleasure and that they deserve it. They come to know themselves. They start to explore their own likes, dislikes, their own boundaries, whatever it is. I mean, it's so important for people, and it's kind of like part of the disowned self in mainstream culture. So it's great that you're mentioning this. I actually give people 21 days of self-pleasure homework,
mm-hmm.
you know, in which I tell them not to have sex with their partner. So,
wow.
So
can they watch each other at least?
Yeah, they get upset about it. I go, 21 days, that's nothing in a life.
It's yeah. Like, yeah.
You know, really.
I mean, it's an incredibly huge taboo in our society still. That, you know, self-pleasuring is looked at as still this kind of almost sinful thing. And doing it consciously and really exploring is just even more forbidden. You know, it's like, it's something you do quickly and on the sly. It's not something that you, generally speaking, do with any kind of intention or awareness behind it.
Right. Well, also, I think the word masturbation is such a disgusting word. Who would want to do that? I mean, it sounds predatorial. It sounds like, I don't know, ammunition. I don't, it's just not
like
a horrible word. So.
Yeah.
I think it puts people off, like they don't want to say the M word. So I like the self-pleasure concept, and I like that you coach people to do that. And
well,
then
masturbation is an interesting word, actually. Our teacher is very into etymology, and the Latin root for masturbation means to stir up, which is kind of cool because it's a way of stirring up energy. I mean, so
I like that. I like that. Stir up. So it's like self-stir up.
Yeah.
Of course, it also stirs up controversy, but you know that's okay.
Great. So then what? Okay. So if you're giving a tip, first of all, let's talk about your books. The Essence of Tantric Sexuality is book one, and Tantra for Erotic Empowerment: The Key to Enriching Your Sexual Life is book two. And people can order those at Amazon.
We prefer that they buy it from the local independent bookseller, or they can order it directly from our website, www.tantrapm.com. Just, you know, Amazon is a very convenient thing, but it's a massive corporation that's sort of consuming a lot of other, small businesses. So we like the indie bookstores if possible. But it is available on Amazon.
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. There's a little politics mixed in there. That's wonderful. I love it. I consider Tantra a political path myself. So thank you for that little plug to independent bookstores. It's great. So what's next? What happens then after they have self-love? Then how would you recommend that people approach their partner? We're talking about approaching. We're talking about Tantra for 21st century partners. So how, then what?
Well, there's a concept, it's a therapist, right?
John Gottman.
John Gottman speaks of, and it's called turning toward your partner, turning toward as opposed to turning away. And we apply this concept when there's a misunderstanding, when we feel sort of a break in our energetic connection. And practically, oftentimes that's just taking a time out and not talking and eye gazing. So we feel that couples are talking too much, actually. And sometimes when there's conflict that arises, the last way to get out of it is to try to talk your way out of it. And the best way to really, you know, get connected is to eye gaze or do some sort of energetic exchange.
Yeah, I like to say
that. Can you just tell me a little bit more about that? You feel that, I love what you said. I feel that we feel that couples talk too much. Can you say a little more about that?
Yeah, when you're speaking, you're using your left brain. Your logical side of your brain. This is not the part of your brain that fell in love with your partner or your beloved. The side that you want to activate is your nonverbal state, and the best way to do that, we find, is, you know, employing eye gazing.
And yeah, I mean, it's a way of circumventing a lot of conflict or. Circumventing is maybe not the right word, because that implies you're avoiding something. It's a way of short-circuiting conflict. And when you're in an argumentative mode with one another, usually you get polarized, and you know each person gets into the place of wanting to be right, and the relationship, this creation that we're collaborating on, sort of gets lost in the process.
I can say for me, it's a physical, it feels very tangible, as if I'm backing into the corner, more and more onto my point, my need to be right or whatever, and I'm putting the problem in between Mark and I. And if we fall into the trap of sort of answering each other back and forth, we are backing farther and farther into opposite corners.
This is such a hot tip that you're giving right now.
Okay. So
yes, I mean, stop talking and do eye gazing. Just stop talking.
Yeah.
So which and, one of you really? Which who is the signal maker? Which one of you says, "Okay, let's stop talking"? Is there one of you that does this more than the other?
You know, right now in our relationship, we don't even have to say anything. I think if one of us or the other feels a little disconnected energetically, we're able to catch it earlier and earlier, because what I think some of these conflicts arise because you're out of harmony energetically. It's not about, oh, I told you to go buy milk and you forgot. I mean, for heaven's sake, how awful is that, you know? But it's a reflection of how connected you are energetically. And I think automatically, if we start to feel that wane, seek each other's eyes out or caress each other or do something in it's become habitual and part of our relating.
Yeah, I mean, I think the important thing is that we started doing this when, you know, from the very beginning of our relationship, and did it as a formal practice whenever we saw each other at first. And
for
then,
months and months and
yeah.
months, yes.
So
yes.
We built a foundation, a practical foundation, and, I mean, you know, kind of the point of a lot of these practices is to have them so in you that you don't need to really do them anymore in the sense of a formal, organized way of doing it. And that's really what happened with this for us.
Sahaja yoga, right?
Yeah.
Natural yoga. So the practices just become so knitted into your being that you don't realize you're doing them all the time.
What was that name of yoga?
Sahaja. It means Sahaja. Natural in Sanskrit.
Okay, and it means natural yoga. Like I think everything is yoga. So I obviously that's kind of what I feel you're describing here. When you said you formally eye gazed for months and months and months as the practice that really brought you together right after meeting each other, what you're describing to me is a new way of courting. Like instead of meeting someone from dinner and discussing how your week was and their week was and then going to a movie or whatever, you actually sat in eye gazing practice and got to know each other in a divine way as you were getting to know each other, instead of getting to know all the the caca, you know, all the stuff of the normal, you know, I'm sure you got to know that as well, but you had a formal practice. It's what you're describing is an amazing way to meet and come together with someone. It's beautiful and it has profound interest.
Yeah. And I like your way. It's a new way of courting. I hadn't thought of it, but it most definitely is.
Yeah.
Because, you know, without realizing it or planning it, oops, we got married. Oops, we wrote a book. Oops, we wrote a second book. You know, it's just like things happen then.
And, you know, collaborating on books is a very tough thing. I mean, I have a big ego around my writing and a lot, you know, often a lot of attachment to my words. And for us to work on these things together and have it go as smoothly as it did is really remarkable. And it's a testament to how, you know, to how well this works.
And we applied practically every technique we have learned along the way to get these books out. I can guarantee we have.
Yeah, I'm sure you did. I mean, I love that you said it. Mark, I think that you said that when you said, I have a really big ego about how I express and how I write and the way I talk and all of that. Just even owning that shows an evolved being for a man to say that I have an ego around it. I'm particular and it's really, and then Patricia, for you to say it, and we've had to practice everything we know. That's real. That's so real. And it's so great to have people sharing with me. That's their journey. And you're choosing devotion moment by moment in pulling yourselves back together with the practices. That's exactly what I wanted for this, for our interview. I wanted the option. And you're speaking about your life, you're actually giving us the option. So it's beautiful. I thank you. I thank you so much. Right now I'm talking with Mark Michaels and Patricia Johnson, and they are from Tantra PM. You can find them at tantrapm.com. That's P for Patricia and M for Mark. It's a very clever name. And we've been talking about an option, a different way of looking at relationships in honor of Valentine's Day, Valentine's Week, if you will. We're looking at what's love got to do with it, love in the romantic sense, and we're talking about the tantric option for people in partnership. So we'll be talking about more of that when we come back right now. Many times on Tantra Cafe, you've heard my guests and me discuss emotional release techniques. Now you can do emotional release work in the privacy of your own home. With my CD, Shamanic Release and Lottie Hahn, I create a very safe and sacred space in which you can do the powerful work I'm known for in my Tantra courses. I set you up with a proper positioning and breathing and then guide you through each emotional state to the beat of tribal African rhythms. Try the CD as an easy way to do your personal clearing on a regular basis and watch your relationships walk free from emotional baggage. You can order my CD at butterflyworkshops.com for only $20. Aren't you worth it? I think so. Go to www.butterflyworkshops.com and get your copy now and walk free from emotional baggage. Well, here we are back again with Patricia Johnson and Mark Michaels, and they're talking about their relationship. They're talking about how their devotion to each other, their devotion to themselves, their devotion to their Tantra practices has taken their relationship out of the norm, so to speak. And while they have normal things come up, trying to write a book together, etc., but how their practices keep them sane and together, et cetera, although they haven't used those words. What else? This is amazing stuff. What other tips do you have for people that they can take home with them?
Well, I did want to go back to people who are maybe just starting in a relationship and say that the way that we approached it, I think, is just such a profoundly healthy and so much better a way of going about things than the usual form of courtship. In other words, being upfront with each other about sexuality from the get-go, of making the decision to do this kind of collaborative thing together from the very beginning. If you can find someone with whom you can be that open at the start, and you can really from the very beginning be on the same page about working this way, it's just so much healthier than going through all the drama that people do in sort of a conventional relationship model.
Go ahead. No, just the conventional relationship model is not working. People are very unhappy. I mean, you're batting 50 percentile or, you know, I don't know, or barely over that. And, you know, who would bet their odds on that? You know, it's just that whole concept needs to be revamped.
Exactly. Well, the statistics are astounding. Over 50% of marriages, at least in the U.S., fail. In some countries, it's higher. Sweden, I think it's higher than that, 65% or something. And then second marriages, it's 80%. So I could see, Mark, how you said earlier in the show that you didn't think you were going to find anybody and you weren't kind of looking anymore. Because to get into a second marriage, the odds are worse. So, and then this thing about courting differently and doing this whole thing differently, you said earlier that you put your sexuality on the table, but it sounds like you didn't actually practice sexuality right away. But maybe you did. I don't know. It sounds like.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, we did.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, after that discussion, we basically, the next time we saw each other, we did sexual exploring together. So.
Okay, great. Okay. So you meant that quick as well. You meant having sex as quickly and putting it on the table, but also you were framing everything with your practices.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's an individual decision when you're comfortable having sex with someone. And that's going to be, you know, I can't say that everyone should do it exactly as we did, but certainly having that conversation early on, you know, instead of withholding it, it creates a foundation where you're being honest with your partner from the get-go.
I think it's important too to come from a place of empowerment where you're actively making that choice, because all too often there's people who do want to have a very active sex life, but they won't allow themselves because of some sort of societal rule or something that they believe about themselves that may not be authentic, or the opposite, where they're agreeing to it but they're not on board 100%, and that both are just dysfunctional.
Well, part of this has to do with manipulation through the withholding of sexuality or the using of sexuality. I mean, that's the thing I was talking about before when I said I'm part of a community where we're trying to exorcise that from people. Part of it is that, oh yeah, if I like you, I'm going to give you sex. And if you do something wrong, I'm going to withhold sex. And sex is going to become the bargaining chip. And in fact, what we're talking about here is sexuality as a sacred practice that isn't used against, you know, the other person or used for certain manipulation.
Exactly.
Also,
it becomes like a commerce, you know, a form of commerce, something you're trading in, like you said. And that, anytime you're doing that, you're disempowering both parties.
And that kind of leads us back to traditional tantra, in a sense, because if you think about the tantric sexual ritual, the classic ritual, it often was done with a partner who was selected for you at random, and the whole process was one in which each partner worshipped the other as an embodiment of the divine, and each partner's role in the ritual was to take the other higher and higher, so that the two participants could achieve these mystical ecstatic states through the ritual. And we having sex with a random partner was probably a much bigger deal in medieval India than it is in modern America. But we can apply that core concept of tantric sexual ritual to both our sex lives and our entire life together, so that it's really a profound way of thinking about things. Instead of a relationship being about, okay, I'm going to get mine, or I'm going to do something for you in hopes that you'll do something for me in return, or, you know, in lovemaking, okay, I'm going to get you off for a bit.
Do you for a while.
So that then
now
you'll
do me.
It really becomes
right.
About each of us. It's a more altruistic way of thinking about things. I'm doing you because I'm in service to you. And, you know, and her doing me, but for the same thing. And as a result of that, each of us really gets a lot more of what we desire than we would if it were
then
the
we
more
can,
conventional.
With that attitude, we can both really fly. We can really, really fly.
Well, this is such a great commercial for Tantra. You know, Mark, before when you were saying if you had a statement, you know, if you can meet somebody who you can be that straight with or communicate that well with, and I really feel that it's possible if an individual sets the tone. If an individual says, look, this is who I am, this is what I want, this is what I'm looking for. It's really different from, I want you to buy me diamonds and I want this and I want all the sex. It's a different thing. And I think it can separate out very quickly for somebody somebody they ought to truly pursue and somebody not. I think people who aren't into that would just walk away. No problem. It would be like a quick
absolutely.
Selection
or
process.
Run.
Yeah. Next.
It may take a while, because I think what we're proposing is something that in this culture is very, very radical. And I think that, to be honest, people have to be prepared for a lot of those walkaways. Just talking about sex can freak a lot of people out.
Right. Well, I totally hear you. I'm without partner at the moment, and I could see, but I'm in the space you're in. You know, I'm in the self-love space. I never suspected when I began practicing Tantra that I could become my own beloved. And in fact, I did. One day I just woke up and I had this whole new feeling about myself, which was really different from before. I don't have any of the whatever insecurities, self-doubt, any kind of second guessing. I don't have any of those things about myself anymore. And I've always been pretty self-confident, but I had those things nonetheless, the monkey mind. And it just doesn't exist anymore. So for me, I like your idea. I think I'm going to try it.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm
right.
It's just such an awesome feeling, though, isn't it, to wake up and realize you've just fallen in love with yourself. I think it's so wonderful.
Yeah,
well,
it is.
You learned that very early.
Yeah, it happened to me in college, and I actually went out and bought a wedding ring for myself. Because
wow,
I really was like,
that's fantastic.
What's going on? I feel like I'm in love. And then suddenly I was like, oh, my God, I'm in love with me. It was really amazing feeling. It still is.
Now, there's, again, that's a tremendously profound. Now, this was while you were also studying Tantra, or this is, you know, when you were doing your readings and your studies, or was this like even before that?
No, it happened while I was studying Tantra. I don't know if it was a direct cause and result, but it certainly was influential. Definitely was.
It's really great. I can see how you two came together, and I can see how you make a profound difference in lives of others, in the lives of your students, because of who you are together, who you're being in this world. It's wonderful. So let me just let people know how to get in touch with you. I'm speaking with Mark Michaels and Patricia Johnson. You're listening to Tantra Cafe, and you can get their book, The Essence of Tantric Sexuality, or Tantra for Erotic Empowerment, The Key to Enriching Your Sexual Life, their second book, from their website, which is tantrapm.com. And we're going to be ending here. We need to say goodbye to people. So I want to really thank you so much for having been on my show. Should people write to you at the website? Can they write to you and get in touch with you that way?
Yes.
Yes.
It's info at tantrapm.com.
Yes.
Yeah. Tantrapm.com. Well, this has been a most enlightening show. I thank you so very much for being my guest.
Thank you for having us on. It was great.
Yeah, thank you.
Wonderful. And I'm also going to, I want to let the listeners know that they can read on up on all of us in the latest New York, Time Out New York magazine. They can go to timeoutnewyork.com and they can find an article which features you and me. And
that's
how we got together. What a wonderful way that was. And I want to tell everybody you can write to me at laurie@tantracafe.com or you can follow me on Facebook or Twitter. I would love to have you follow me there. And please write to me with any questions or any suggestions for other guests. Next week, we'll be talking again about Tantra and we'll shed more light on relationships and sex, of course. So namaste from Tantra Cafe. I look forward to our next time together.